Matt, I'd appreciate it if you'd get the rest of my committee up here, or if any of them are watching on TV, come on down now. But we have a very, very full agenda today, so we're going to get started. What we're going to do is we're going to hold a, well, I'll just open it, public hearing on Senate Bill 481 and 634, which are the bottle bills. Representative Berger is with us. She's also going to talk about Senate Bill 706, which is the bottle bill that she and the President are sponsoring, which is sitting in a different committee right now, but which is moving to this committee very quickly. After we take the testimony on the bottle bills, we are going to hold a work session on Senate Bill 568. That is Senator Atkinson's bill. A public hearing and then work session. He was concerned that all of you would leave after the bottle bill discussion was done. The chair would be very appreciative if you would indulge Senator Atkinson and everybody stay to hear his gripping testimony on the Oregon Community Foundation. Is that all right? Would you like to say anything?
That was a good commercial.
All right. We should go on. And then if we get through that, I would like very much for us to move to the work session on Senate Bill 156 and Senate Bill 450. I know we have a lot of people here to testify on the bottle bill today. We're going to try and get through everybody so we can get to that work session. My apologies if we don't make it to that today, but we'll try. With that, Representative Berger, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Vicki Berger, State Representative, District 20. I will be very brief. I brought some special guests today to speak to you, but I did want to mention Senate Bill 706, which is lost in some other committee, but which is the sort of basic bottle bill update that I started with, and I just wanted to go through that. These are sort of the fundamentals that I'm trying to achieve here in terms of a bottle bill upgrade. The bill simply calls for the current bottle bill structure and includes containers that are of a certain size that held water, and it adds some aluminum containers that are not currently in the bottle bill, things like Lipton iced tea. It is not carbonated. It comes in an aluminum can just about identical to your standard Pepsi. I would like to have those included. Those are incredibly recyclable containers, and it I think is an oversight that they're not in the bottle bill. The other piece of this bill is something around raising the redemption value. I have left that in the bill draft as a blank line with the idea that the committee needs to talk about that and can be open as to what that number might be. Remember, this was drafted, believe it or not, back in October. So we've come a long way since in October, and I'm very happy about that. So that's sort of what I'm trying to get at, which is the basic pieces of the bottle bill that I think are just sort of bedrock that we need to deal with. Anything over and above that, I would be applauding, but this bill is sort of a minimal bill. I appreciate your hearing it without hearing it today. I know you have a big agenda, so at this point I'm going to close and introduce to you, who they can introduce themselves, three students from West Salem High School. They have they are master recyclers. They have a DVD to show you, and then we'll speak briefly to the bottle.
Very good, and welcome Representative Jackie Dingfelder, who chairs our counterpart on the House side of the building, Energy and Environment Committee. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Is this an okay place to sit, or I'd be happy to sit on that end.
Oh, perfect.
Do you want to sit on the left?
Welcome.
Hi.
Very glad you're here today. Why don't you each introduce yourself and then tell us what you're going to show us.
All right. I'm Brielle Weininger. I'm a freshman at West Salem High School.
I'm Kirsten Bachman, also a freshman.
I'm McKenna Simpson, also a freshman.
Terrific.
We're here today to show you our video that we made for the new recycling program we started this year at West.
Up next.
Hi, my name is Dave Fahler, employment specialist right here at West Salem High School. I'm not here to let you know about the employment world of juniors and seniors, but rather the world of recycling here at West Salem. It's a hot topic right now. It's in the news. Our own state representative, Vicki Berger, is talking about the bottle bill to the legislature. A group of very excited freshman students and staff have been working since November behind the scenes to put together a new recycling program for our lunch times. Now it is time for all of us to join in. We are pleased to have had the guidance of Kelly Cooley, recycling coordinator for the Salem District. Mr. Dibelbiss and Mr. Hune's class are helping us get started, and we thank them as well. You will notice a new setting for the cafeteria starting in January. We will have three stations available for you to discard your lunch products and garbage. Blue is recycle and gray is garbage. We will show you an example in a moment and tell you about how it comes back to you in the form of new products. Did you know that we spend $5,000 on garbage here at the school that goes into our trash compactor? They weigh it to know how much to charge us. But when we recycle, there is going to be a zero charge to us. Only the garbage will be weighed. About 80% of what Americans throw away is recyclable. Everyone should recycle every day, so please do your part. Recycling at school starts with you. Now let me introduce some of our recycling spokesladies, Brielle Weiniger, McKenna Simpson, Kirsten Bachman, and Ashlyn Reese. They'll show you how easy this will be.
This bin is for your utensils. Your forks, your knives, and your spoons will go here. Once you're done, move on to the next station.
This can is for liquids only. You can dump your milk, juice, water, or any other liquids here. But remember, we only recycle packaging, not food. So make sure all the liquid is emptied out of any container you wish to recycle. Here is where you dump your empty milk carton or juice cartons. But make sure that all the liquid is emptied before you toss it in the bin.
This is a spot for all of your garbage. All your food will go in here, but remember to save your plates. We will recycle that in another place. You can also put other non-recyclable garbage in here like plastic sandwich bags, napkins, paper towels, and the caps from your water and juice bottles.
This area is for styrofoam or polystyrene cups, plates, and bowls from our cafeteria. They are picked up by Recycling Professionals Incorporated and trucked to Portland where they are recycled. They are washed and chipped into small pieces, dried, and made into pellets. Then they are melted and sent to a plastics manufacturer. At the manufacturer, they are made into letter trays, ballpoint pens, and desk organizers.
This is your mixed recycling bin. It's much like your blue one at home. We're just going to go over a few that you'll see in our school cafeteria.
Empty water and juice bottles are placed here. The plastics in these bottles are made from oil, coal, and gas. When we recycle new bottles and make new ones, we save valuable resources. Americans go through 4 million plastic bottles every hour, yet only 1 out of 4 is recycled.
Aluminum and tin cans also go in this bin. The metals from aluminum and tin cans are mined from ores through a process that requires a tremendous amount of energy. When you recycle a can instead of making a new one from ore, you save enough energy to run a TV set for 3 hours or to light a 100-watt light bulb for 20 hours. Americans use 100 million tin cans and 200 million aluminum cans every single day.
You can even recycle your paper lunch sacks. Just make sure that they're clean and free from food.
Remember, these simple steps will only take a minute out of your lunch and will save valuable resources, money, and energy. And remember, you can too!
The committee may have some questions for you, but is there anything you wanted to say before we do that?
I would like to say that we're all here today to support Vicki Berger's new expansion for the bottle bill.
Terrific. Committee? Senator Atkinson.
Did you already get the A, or does this pretty much testify with the A?
Yeah, I had mandatory attendance today to get the A.
All right. So we're on cable TV, so we've just inked the A. Is that right, do you think?
Yeah, probably.
Well, that's really good. Can you tell us, in your experience, the difference between water bottles versus pop cans? Do you see more of one or the other in your recycle program?
Yes. We see bottles more because our school has just recently banned all pop machines, so therefore we don't have any more pop cans unless the students bring them from home. And so the students bring a lot more bottles to our stations to recycle.
And Aquafina and Propel and stuff is sold at, like, our at our snack shacks and our restaurants that we have there. It's mostly all just plastic bottles.
Thank you.
Good. Girls, very nicely done. Thank you very much for coming today. Your testimony is very helpful.
Thank you for having us.
You bet. Chris McCullough, David Dowry, and Tim Rochak. You know, everybody on this end of the dais is probably too old to remember this kind of thing in 1971, but for, I don't know, when were you born?
You're too young.
I was probably about 2 years younger than these girls when, truthfully, in 1971 when, and I remember doing the same exact thing when the bottle bill was passing in 71. I don't know. You guys, you're much older. You're much older than me. You probably
tower in age.
We destroyed our credibility. Nobody out there would believe that you and I are the same age. Nobody would believe that.
I won't make any hair jokes, Brad.
Welcome. Sorry, we digressed a bit. Mr. McCullough, you want to go first?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Chris McCullough. I'm from Roseburg, Oregon. I'm the Douglas County Waste and Reduction Manager for Douglas County Public Works. I work for the county. I come from a very conservative county, one that isn't directly identified as a green county, and we have the last free landfill known to man, I think. It's actually a free landfill. There's no fees, and of course we know that will probably change down the road. But even with the free landfill, we have a 30% recycling rate, which comes with quite a few challenges. And that the one challenge is without the monetary reward of recycling provided at our landfills, people only are recycling because of moral obligations, moral payout. And we're doing a very good job in Douglas County, even though we're not considered green. But everyone is on a there's a continuum of dedication. You know, when given an opportunity to recycle, people will. But without that opportunity, many don't. So, you know, when you're in an office, you see a garbage can, no recycle bin, you're going to throw it away. And I think that needless to say, in homes, a lot of cans, a lot of bottles are being thrown away because they just don't see the opportunity. A lot of people on that continuum feel it's not worth my nickel to go through all the effort to go to this store and redeem this container. So without providing a greater monetary reward, people's moral obligations will dictate what they do. 35 years ago, Oregon realized this and was a leader, and we cleaned up our roadways, we improved our recycling programs, and now we're falling behind. We're no longer leading the charge. We're way behind in where we stand in recycling. Existing containers and return rate remain on existing container return rate where there's a deposit remain high, whereas containers without a deposit are very low. We all know, we've all seen that our plastic return rate is under 25%, and it's a direct correlation between the redemption of a nickel and without. If we are to reduce the waste, preserve natural resources, preserve our landfill space and reduce emissions, we must modernize the bottle bill. By bringing all beverage containers into the fray, we increase the feedstocks available for recycled materials, promoting more opportunities for industry and economy here in Oregon. We reduce the waste entering our landfills, thus extending the length of life on these landfills, thus saving the community's money. We reduce the carbon and toxin emissions because we're not pulling the material out of the ground, we're not transporting raw materials, and we're going to provide more jobs using, if one of the two greater bills, the numbers, if 634 or 481 are to pass, we can provide more jobs by using the money currently pocketed by manufacturers to promote our program in Oregon. The grocers don't like any of the bills being considered here. I understand that. However, their support of a recycle bank doesn't promote product stewardship. It doesn't encourage distributors to stop making the products that are difficult to recycle. They're not the recycle bank program doesn't promote change in that avenue, and is tied directly to markets. If the market crashes on plastic tomorrow, no one's going to be recycling plastic because they're not getting paid for it. However, with a continued expansion of the bottle bill, they'll continue getting their 10 cents back. It's important to realize that not to mention the two bills that are before you are more palatable and are because it supports folks that aren't just interested in their own interests but in cleaning up the entire community. I put my full support behind Bill 634. The bill supported by the AOR, Association of Oregon Recyclers. It puts more responsibility upon the manufacturer and is an easier pill to swallow by constituents because the processing fee is paid to the state before the product hits the shelves. It's paid for by the manufacturer. For the past 35 years, the manufacturer has been able to pocket all the unclaimed money we paid out. I buy my soda pop, I throw my can away, the distributor kept that nickel to the tune of billions of dollars. Bill 481 is a good bill, but it also does not motivate manufacturers to be better stewards. Because if the consumer is paying that 3 cents up front, if I give you 13 cents for my soda and I only get 10 cents back, it's going to be hard for the constituents to swallow that pill. But if the manufacturers pay it up front, they're going to be encouraged to hopefully produce products that maybe they don't want to pay that 3 cents on something. Maybe they'll get rid of juice boxes and things like that. I don't know. And I want to commend Representative Berger. She's done a wonderful job by bringing the modern bottle bill to the forefront and communicating with the public. I do believe that her bill is an essential introduction. If 634 or 481 cannot be passed, we must pass 706. It's 10 years overdue. However, it's a baby step. If we keep taking baby steps, we'll never get back to the forefront of the recycling program. We must take the lead, just as your predecessors did 35 years ago. Oregon is the most beautiful state in the Union, and we must do our part to keep it green. And that's the conclusion of my presentation.
All right. Thank you, Mr. McCollum. Why don't you go ahead next? We'll take everybody's testimony as you come up that's at the table before we do questions.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Timothy John Rochek. I'm the CEO of Garten Services at 334 Industrial Way, Salem, Oregon. Garten Services is a private not-for-profit rehabilitation program. We provided services to over 500 people with significant disabilities in the last year in the Mid-Willamette Valley. We're based in Salem, but we provide services as far north as Tigard, as far south as Junction City, Dallas, Silverton area, and throughout the Mid-Willamette Valley. We have held the state of Oregon's recycling contract, primarily paper recycling, since the early 70s. And you might be interested to learn that the recycling business at Garten Services provides jobs for about 100 people with significant disabilities, most of whom it was the first job they ever held, the first opportunity they had to work their way out of a welfare system. I'm here today. I'm not going to spend a lot of time trying to sell you on the idea of increasing recycling. There's lots of people here that will do that, and they'll do it better than I. Obviously, we believe in recycling, and it's been well documented that the bottle bill has increased the rate of recycling in Oregon. I want to commend the committee and Representative Berger for taking on this issue. It's a tough issue. I think the level of interest shows that it is time to make a step in the bottle bill in Oregon, and I applaud you for taking on that task. Mainly what I'm here to talk about today is the concept of redemption centers. And in the bills that are being considered, there's a variety of things that each bill emphasizes. But in at least two of the bills, there's the idea of a redemption center that might be an alternative to the grocer. And I'm here to say that the concept of a redemption center is something that private not-for-profit organizations like Garten Services might be willing to help implement at some point. We do not have the same drive for profit that many for-profit companies do. Our mission is to provide jobs. And as I've already pointed out, recycling provides job opportunities for people with disabilities throughout the state of Oregon. So as you consider the bills and you struggle with the idea of how would these redemption centers operate, who could do it, how would that work, would it be too expensive, I would like to offer any support I can give the committee and the state. Certainly Garten Services in the areas we operate in Salem and Eugene and points west and east, we would certainly be interested in helping implement a concept like that. We work with a lot of garbage haulers and other recyclers. We work in partnership with them. And we work with folks like grocers in terms of placing people with disabilities and folks like Michael Roth, who will testify, I'm sure, today. So our interest is in seeing recycling continue and in seeing jobs for people with disabilities. We're not advocating for a particular bill. But I do want to also support the concept of taking the best pieces of the bill. I understand, Mr. Chairman, that you're looking at a work group to try and struggle with the issues and put forward a bill that has the best chance of meeting the needs of Oregonians. I applaud that approach. I've had such a wonderful time with Representative Dingfelter's work group that I think stakeholders can come together and figure out the best ways to bring a bill like this forward. So I'm willing to help in whatever way I can. I applaud you, and if I can be of any further assistance, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Dowry?
Good afternoon. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is David Dowry. I live at 25204 Airport Road, Philomath, Oregon. I'm here as a private citizen, and I want to encourage you to expand the bottle bill. I have written testimony that you may have in front of you. Back in the 70s, we were pioneers. No longer are we pioneers. You'll see attached to my written testimony a synopsis of what is being done in other states. So it's not like we are having to pave the path. What I do want to do is, as a private individual, provide observations as to what I see as being the containers that are not being recycled. And I see this on a daily basis when I walk out in the country. And I would say to you that if you're going to expand the bottle bill, I have an order of priority. And it's to start with water bottles and then go to non-carbonated flavored drink bottles, the natural fruit drink bottles, liquor bottles sold out at OLCC stores, which you certainly have control over, and I don't know why they never did that in the beginning, and then wine bottles and other alcoholic beverages. Certainly, those are in order of occurrence where I see them currently in the ditches where I live. In times for recycling, I've had issues around flattened containers, and certainly that needs to be strengthened in terms of any legislation. Some of the grocery stores honor flattened containers. Others don't. I've specified that in my testimony. Also, number of containers that can be recycled by one person in one day acts as a discouragement for recycling because you take the recycling into town and you're only limited. You have a limited number of containers. Right now it's 144 that are required by law. I don't know why it's such a low threshold. But if you're storing them up so that you have economic trips to town, such as myself, I would certainly see the limit being greater, particularly if you go with the idea of a redemption center. A lower priority for me is raising the redemption rate, the deposit. I'd like to see the current law expanded in terms of the containers that are covered. I've looked at both Senate Bills 481 and 634. I haven't had a chance to look at Representative Berger's bill. My observations, one is the definition of a beverage. Certainly I would want to make sure that that definition was not too vague to be enforceable. Currently, reading the legislation, it leaves me some doubt as to whether it really covers all the beverages that I have listed in my as being in the containers that could be recycled. Also, the types of containers that can be recycled. The bill tends to be rather prescriptive in terms of what, I think that's the right word, prescriptive, in terms of what kind of containers, materials can be recycled. Certainly the U.S. Container manufacturers are very innovative in terms of the containers, and certainly we wouldn't want to restrict those if they came up with a cellulose container, for instance, that is round and can be recycled with current equipment. We want to include those. One bill has cartons deleted, the other one has cartons included. And most of all, or finally, increasing the limit of containers. And Matt, I really applaud your efforts to expand the bottle bill. Encourage your efforts. Thank you very much.
Committee? Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming, testifying, and appreciate it, especially the drive from Douglas County. You did say something that I don't think I heard you correctly, and so I wanted to clarify. You were saying, you were talking about the grocers and the distributors, and I don't know which one in particular, but you said something about the word billion you uttered, and I'm wondering, that's the first time I've heard that. So can you clarify? I mean,
certainly.
Somebody's saving, making $1 billion here?
Over the
this
course
would be
of
a,
pa- over
this
the
would
course
be a good
of the past
business
35 years, certainly.
Who's that?
The manufacturers of the products, the Pepsis, the Cokes, the Budweisers, they all get the nickel through our current system. And then when I bring my can back in, they have to give it back to the grocer, who in turn gives it to me. But where are those unclaimed hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of course millions of containers that are unclaimed, where does that nickel remain? It remains in the hands of the manufacturer to the tune of X amount of dollars. And over 35 years, I don't have the data in front of me, but the term I heard, and I would stand corrected, was about $1 billion over the, and someone could testify behind me, I'm sure, as to what that number is. But in the two bills, the 634 and the 481, maintain all those unclaimed deposits in the state fund to fund further recycling programs. And supporting the Redemption Center programs.
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that.
Okay, thank you, all three of you. Appreciate your testimony very much. Rick Kronwitter and Clifford Fountain. And Mr. Kronwitter, as you're coming up, there's a couple names on my sheet here that look similar. Are you the 774 phone number?
No.
Okay. If your daughter would like to join you at the table, that would be fine. Up to her. Mr. Kronwitter, why don't you go ahead as soon as you're ready.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Senators, Representative Berger, my name is Rick Kronwitter. I hail from Portland. I'm actually a constituent of Senator Avakian's. This is my daughter, Waverly. She's having a good day. I took her out of school today, the tail end of the day at least, for a little civics lesson. I'm actually here representing her and perhaps her generation. Our society needs to go through some colossal changes. There's no question about it. Global warming is upon us. Life as we know it right now has got to change. Our habits have to change. We've got to give a little. There's a lot of improvements that we need to make across the board with global warming coming. There's no single solution. There's no silver bullet. It's a lot of change, and it's a lot of self-sacrifice. I'm very passionate about bottle bills, primarily because of the energy savings due to the very high redemption rates. I'm passionate about them because they instill a reuse and recycling ethic. And as Oregonians know, all of you here, they instill a pride in our state. We throw less stuff out the window. We throw less stuff in the trash can. We are making a stab at doing away with the throwaway society. I have 5 years of experience working full-time on bottle bill campaigns, two initiative campaigns, two legislative campaigns. I currently work for one of the nation's largest recyclers, have so for the last 7 years. My job, I'm actually a buyer. I buy recycling for a living, and I help businesses set up successful recycling programs. One of the things I do downtown Portland, all those tall office buildings, not all of them, but a number of them, I spend an evening with the janitors once a year, and I trail through the buildings, collecting the paper with them, blah, blah, blah. The number one single thing coming out of those office towers that never gets recycled are water bottles. The custodians will pick out the beverage containers that have a deposit, but water bottles, increasingly downtown Portland, a lot of people are drinking water, and the containers are being discarded oftentimes. I sit here today in hopes that you will put Oregon on the map again. Wouldn't it be great if this committee could help steer a bill through this legislature and then ultimately a bill that would help us pass a national bottle bill? That's what really has to happen here, I think. Right now, bottle bills in other states, they very closely resemble our bottle bill. I think feel very strongly that when you consider changing our bottle bill, that you think in terms of the whole nation and what could be cookie-cuttered, not only for Oregon, but elsewhere. Senate Bill 706, Representative Berger's bill, hits the nail right on the head. It increases the redemption value. It adds water bottles, which are the least, are valuable. They don't biodegrade easy. They're very important to the bill. And the one thing I think I feel most strongly about is there's one thing missing from her bill. For the past 36 years, the retailers have taken it on the chin here in Oregon. They don't get any sort of compensation for all the handling and everything that they do here in this state. There's no question about it. They've got additional handling, and they have storage requirements. Every other state, though, just about, has a handling fee that the distributors pay to the retailers. The gentleman before me spoke about the unclaimed deposits. The distributors get those unclaimed deposits. The distributors get the scrap value of the aluminum cans that were returned, the plastic bottles, and of the glass beverages. That money, that pool of money, the unclaimed deposits, and the scrap value will help offset a handling fee. I would advocate that retailers get paid 3 cents a container when they are returned to the distributor. If that happens, new jobs will come to Oregon. There's no question about it. The stores that haven't been able to hire people can now hire people to help sort the containers. One of the key things, we have redemption centers here in Oregon by Oregon statute, but they never sprouted because there's no money in it for the redemption center. If they take bottles and cans back from us, well, the redemption center would have to pay us a nickel, and then the distributor would in fact pay the redemption center a nickel, and so there would be nothing in that for them. But after an extensive interview with Peter Spendelow on DEQ, he suggested that other states across the nation right now are trying to get moving their handling fee up from 1 cent to 2 cents up to 3 cents. 3 cents would enable redemption centers to flourish here. The advantage of a redemption center is that stores that don't have a lot of space, if something else is close, a lot of people will just automatically go to the redemption center as well. Lastly, if 3 cents is passed or is passed on to the retailer from the distributor, that would be roughly $36 million annually be paid. And that's based on 1.3 billion containers which are returned in this state currently. And that's without water bottles. So that's 36 million. So when I was here on Thursday, I heard the leader of the retail lobbyists say, stores don't want more money. Well, if I was a store owner and I had a chance to get a piece of $36 million, I wouldn't necessarily say, we don't necessarily want that money. I understand they don't necessarily want more containers coming into the store, but if they've got the 3 cents, that will help support more reverse vending machines, more sorting, and allow for redemption centers to sprout as well. I firmly believe that by significantly raising the deposit, including water bottles, and providing a 3 cent handling fee to retailers and redemption centers, this committee will pave the way for a very successful bill that will create a national template and set the stage for a national bill. As a citizen of the United States, I'm tired of consuming the most energy and resources of any country in the world. How about you?
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Fountain?
My name is Cliff Fountain. I live in Eugene at 1997 Shiloh Street. I'm a retired physicist with a master's degree from the University of Oregon and a master's degree in materials engineering from Stanford University. I am a certificated Lane County master recycler, and I've volunteered for that organization for the last year and a half. I'm also a volunteer for the last 3.5 years as a member of the staff of the Next Step Recycling Center, where we recycle computers and other plastics. It's a 501c3 organization that has recycled over 800 tons of plastic in the last 3 years. And we hire handicapped people. We have work experience programs for high schoolers, and we have quite a staff of about 100 volunteers at any one time, not all serving at once, but rotating. As a master recycler, I participate in teaching activities around Eugene at such events as the Lane County Fair, the Eugene Celebration, Arts in the Vineyard, University of Oregon Street Fairs, community neighborhood picnics, Earth Day, and recently the Good Earth Home Garden and Living Show, where I help people realize that proper disposal of their plastics and paper goods will relieve some of the pressure on sanitary landfills. That a little effort on their part would accomplish some of these goals. But when I look around the city in general, and with some of my neighbors, I'm dismayed at how hard it is for people to really carry through with the things that they know is best for the environment. As I go around the city, I notice in trash cans at parks, near vending machines, service stations, county fairs, skate parks, schools, any place where canned or bottled beverages are available, that the trash can often have beverage containers with them. If they're recycled, are wonderful scavengers, get them. But not all of them. The bags that these trash cans have are lined with our plastic bags, and a lot of that, the cleaning up crew takes that bag with whatever's left in it and throws it in a dumpster. And off it goes to the landfill. The scavengers, however, do not collect water bottles or non-deposit bottles. Sports, fruit drinks, sports containers, many of these are disposed of in exercise clubs, workplaces, and city parks. What I see is that people need an incentive to recycle their beverage containers, and that is where raising the deposit amount on containers and extending the kinds of covered containers is essential to accomplishing this goal. One of our local dairies sells milk in glass bottles, and they charge 95-cent deposit. You can bet that none of these bottles go into the trash. In fact, they get a 90% recycle rate, and the other 10% they believe is due to breakage or going into a recycling outside of refunding. They saw no change in their business when they raised the rates from 60 cents per bottle to 95 cents just a couple of years ago. I urge you to extend the containers covered by any bottle bill to increase the types of beverages covered, fruit juices, sports drinks, water, wine, anything that's a beverage. We could go into mayonnaise jars, but I don't think that would pass. And do not limit the size of containers, because Coca-Cola used to be served in a 6-ounce bottle. Now, a fifth of a liter is 6.76 ounces, a fifth of a liter. So if you reduce the size of bottle-covered materials to 7 ounces, they'll take 1 tablespoon of fluid out of that container and make it so that it's not covered by the bottle bills that I've seen proposed. This is, and I would urge you to raise the deposit rate to 25 cents. This is more than the cost of living, and it's not something that people are going to lose. They get it back when they refund the bottles. I have the unclaimed deposits go towards cleaning up the environment and not to the bottlers or the developers. And let's get serious about this trash problem because it's not going to get better. That's all I have to say.
Very good. Committee? Nothing. Well, thank you both very much for being here. Waverly, I'm very glad you were here today, too. Welcome to the Capitol. Mike McRae, Rick Craycraft, and Jeff Sijukal. And just for a time check, folks, because the committee does have some other business, we're going to need to wrap up the bottle bill at about 10 after. We still have about 15 people to get through. So I would appreciate it greatly if you could say everything that is important to you, but do it in 2 to 3 minutes. The only exception to that is going to be Mr. McRae, because he's here from Maine. And so
the state of Maine.
And so we're going to give you a couple extra minutes. But why don't you go ahead? Appreciate you being here.
Thank you. First, I'd like to say that I'm neither for nor against your recycling programs here. Just hope to enlighten some challenges and share some things that we've had in Maine and Vermont. We also do business in the state of California and the province of Ontario, so we're familiar with bottle bills and what transpires and the hurdles that come along with them.
I'm sorry. You just need to go ahead and say your name for the record so we get that on the recording.
Michael McRae.
Thank you.
Strategic Materials, Next Cycle. Strategic Materials is the largest glass processor here in the United States and the North American, and Next Cycle is the 10th largest plastic processor in North America as well, predominantly out of Canada. So we have one redemption center in the Augusta, Maine area. We are familiar with the redemption center process in which you're proposing here, and as well we also provide recycling services to manufacturers, distributors, and collection services to the redemption centers. So in light of what I've read over the three bills that you have proposed, and the only thing, some things to share with you with some problems that we've had in the other two, at least the other two northeastern states in which this seems to be patterned after. When you collect your nickels from your present beer and soda distributors that have a presence here in the state, you have some very strong numbers and a good tracking system of exactly what's being sold here in this state. And with the crink process, you have a very good process to tell exactly what's coming back. So the circle of nickels would be considered closed. When you open those doors to other expanded items, I caution you in the collection of nickels. Most manufacturers that don't have a bottling plant here or don't have a distributor here in your state have a very difficult time because of central distribution to provide you good solid numbers. For instance, a particular manufacturer does a variety of water or juices, distributes to a central warehouse in a neighboring state that doesn't have a bottle bill. There's no initiation of deposit done. That central distribution then distributes out to your particular state. So the originator of the manufacturer, the water company, can't tell you exactly how many of their units actually came into your state. So it endangers some of the process here. It's not that it can't be done and there's not other things that can be done to help control this, but you have potential to turn it upside down very, very quickly when you're buying back nickels that you never collected from the start. Okay? So part of that distributor process. I know there was mentioned about limiting the UPC codes to relevant to this particular state so you could help control some of those particular issues. The state of Maine tried that. was unsuccessful. The Anheuser-Busch's of the world were able to do one particular label for them. Coke was able to do one particular label, but they couldn't realistically, with central distribution, do all their different flavors from central distribution and bottle just for our particular state. And indeed, if they had a bottling plant here, as I do understand that you do have a Pepsi canning plant that's here in the state, and that might be more easily accomplishable. But in our particular state, in Maine and in Vermont, that's been challenged and has been not been successful at referring that back to a manufacturer to impose a particular UPC for your state only. And I give you, for instance, there is juice manufacturers who will do as much as 10 or 12 different flavors and 10 or 15 different sizes. It's unrealistic that they're going to bottle those and warehouse them just for your particular state. As you talk about raising handling fees, I caution you that at the same time you have neighboring states who do not have bottle bills or that have bottle bills with substantially less cost involved, that you don't encourage them to come across the borders in large groves in which there is actually nothing written in your present bill to prohibit that. There's no teeth in it to detour that. And you could be buying back somebody else's nickels or dimes or quarters. When you talk about the sizes of materials, I know you had some discussions from just water to expansion to juice or whatever. As you get into those particular products, realize that the reverse vending system that you presently have will not accept gallon containers. It has some size limitations. It also has some shape limitations when you get beyond water and you get into the juice realm and other areas that they have multiple shapes and sizes, and a reverse vending machine has to rotate the bottles in which to read the UPC codes. And the machinery at the present time does not have the technology to do that. So therefore, those items have to be sorted in bulk and transported in bulk rather than in condensed form. So it raises some additional cost. And also, when you get into those other items, you're talking about multiple facets of the plastic chemicals. It's not just plastic. You have number ones, number twos, number fours, number fives, number sevens, and they can't be mixed or you've just created a whole bunch of garbage. So I caution you on those things. In the realm of redemption centers, unless you put some type of limitation as to the number of them, you have opportunities to for them to come back and be unsuccessful and have to come back to this committee to ask for additional fees to raise their revenue so they can make it to provide services to the public. The state of Maine in 1989 had 227 redemption centers. When the expanded bottle bill came in 1991, we went to 413. And this has now gone back to legislation twice asking for increased handling fees because they can't manage to get enough volume to sustain business. So there is some consideration there. All of the things that you've discussed, everybody would say that the recycling is a great idea, and but it doesn't come without some type of an expense. And it's all of these things can be done, but they just need to be worked at slowly and considered all facets of it. Bring in the professionals, get a chance to sit around the round table and discuss all of your issues and try to game plan rather than just push something in for the sake of filling that void that everybody wants to fill so you can make it successful. Okay.
Thank you. The commission, too, Mr. McCray has been gracious enough to offer his advice by phone and even to come back out to Oregon again if need be. So thank you for that.
Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rick Craycraft. I drove down from Portland today. I live at 4060 Southeast Holgate Boulevard. I'm a diligent voter, a somewhat happy taxpayer, a committed recycler. I'm a certified master recycler through the Metro program. I'm a member of Recycling Advocates in Portland, although I'm not speaking for them today. I'm here as a concerned citizen and committed recycler. When I moved to Oregon in 1973, the bottle bill was fresh and new, and everybody was very proud of it. 34 years later, I'm now a self-employed remodeler, and as such, I spend a lot of time driving around in my truck. And I have decided that I make a point of pulling over and picking up discarded plastic single-serve containers. And I probably pick up an average of 8 to 10 a day. Now, that means that I pick up, according to this article in the Oregonian, where it says 34 are discarded every year for every man, woman, and child in Oregon, and 125 million total. I pick up my share and maybe my girlfriend's share and a few other people's share, but I have not made a dent in the 125 million. So that's why I'm here, is to encourage you to draft and pass the strongest bill possible. I'd like to see a bottle bill that it will hold up for another 35 years, one that's thought of 35 years in the future. That's about all I got to say.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Jeffrey Juckle. I represent Hagen, Oregon. I've worked in the grocery business all of my life. I started at Rainier Thriftway in Rainier, Oregon in 1975 as a container clerk. I have sorted, stacked, picked, pulled, and handled more nasty bottles than you probably have ever seen in your life. And I still oppose Senate Bill 481. The reason why is not that we're against recycling or what the bottle bill stands for. They're great things. That's what's made Oregon special, unique, and great. We need to continue it. But this bill does not do the job. It has three problems. The cost and burden it puts on retailers. Currently, for each one of our stores, we spend about 8 hours a day or $24,000 per year just to take care of the bottle machines. Now, if this bill is passed, expanding into other containers, that cost, which is put on retailers, will also expand. We have a loss of retail space. We put 600-plus square feet per store just for the machines as is, not counting storage. This will also balloon out of proportion to where our stores will become recycling centers first and grocery stores second. Third component, I'm a member of the WIC VAC Advisory Board. I represent a grocery person that represents the industry on that board. I will explain if anyone does not understand what WIC is. WIC is a program, federally funded program, established in 1972 by an amendment to the Child Nutrition Act of 1966. The purpose of WIC is to serve as an adjunct to health care, providing nutrition, education, counseling, nutritious supplemental foods, and health screening and referral services to pregnant, breastfeeding women, infants, and children in high-risk areas. The bottle bill will impact them by expanding into juice containers and other containers, not milk, that will put a burden onto the WIC program, which is currently under a state and federal cost containment process. Because of this increased cost, the retailers will have to an increase in the FI or food instrument cost. Any increase in food instrument cost outside of the norm causes a reject with no payment to the FI at all. This no payment has to go through a petition process to receive payment. The other component is by putting a 13-cent deposit on WIC, potential WIC items and the current WIC items, this passes the cost of the bottle bill onto the WIC program, which cannot afford that. The other option would be to remove that deposit from those items and have the WIC client ring these items up separately and basically do a deposit exempt and have them pay out of pocket. This is also a burden to the WIC person, WIC client, and to the retailer. The other problem with this is the 3 cents being held back is a violation of federal law when it as it pertains to WIC, because WIC and WIC clients cannot be charged for any supplemental food. Because they aren't able to return this container for the full 13 cents, they'll lose 3 cents and thus being charged 3 cents for that item. This, again, based on these points, the cost of operations, the space lost, and the impact on the WIC retailer, we oppose Senate Bill 481. We do support recycling, solve, and programs such as the Recycle Bank. Thank you.
Thank you, the three of you. Appreciate it very
question.
Much. Sorry, Senator Pozanski.
I just have to ask. I mean,
yes.
We've had a number of people come up from the retailer perspective. What's the responsibility for retailers as to what they sell in their stores? Isn't there something as us as Oregonians that we should be, you know, happy that we have the bottle bill and be supportive of it? You know, your testimony kind of disturbs me because it's basically we want to continue to sell. We'll sell whatever we can sell. The market will let the market bear the cost. But we're not going to take any part of the responsibility being part of the solution to the problem?
No, we have no problem being part of it. I'm not saying stop the bottle bill, but expanding it puts more and more of a burden on us as retailers that cannot afford it. It's costing us more and more. And yes, we want to take responsibility. We are a part of it. We're taking care of it right now. But now you're saying we want all juice containers, all water containers, into boxed beverage containers. Are we responsible for all the containers and all the garbage we sell?
Can I respond?
You're the senator.
It would seem to me that you could actually maybe help move the market as to what is brought into your store, as to telling the manufacturers, we will not sell this type of item because it does not fit the Oregon bottle bill as we want it to be, as to the size of containers, the type of containers. I mean, to me, there's got to be a solution here. Mm-hmm. And what I understand from what you've said on 481 is it doesn't work. Let's just leave it as it is. No changes in 35 years, and that's it.
No, that is not. I'm sorry, sir. That was not my intent, and Chair. My intent was that Senate Bill 481 has issues. We want to. We agree with things like the recycle bank, different ways to do it. But just to pile more and more on what is being done would not work.
Representative Dingfelder has a question, and then we will move on to a new panel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your indulgence here, as I'm not an official member of the committee. But I just wanted to say hello to Mr. McRae, because I used to live in Maine. I actually worked for the Maine Waste Management Agency for Sherry Huber during the expansion of Maine's bottle bill. A couple of quick questions I have about your testimony. And just to clarify for committee members, when we expanded the bottle bill in Maine, the system in place already was redemption centers. It was different than in Oregon, where we had, now we have grocery stores, and that in essence serves as our redemption centers. Question I had for you, and I've been in Oregon since 1993, so I left Portland, Maine, to move to Portland, Oregon. but I did work for 4 years on the expansion of the bottle bill in Maine. A question I had is, one, what is the current rate of redemption now in Maine with the expanded bottle bill? And then the second is, since we did have collect the escheat in Maine, do you know what the current escheat collection number is on an annual basis?
At the present time, the return rate in the state of Maine, depending on whom you speak with, the state has not collected good, valuable data. Mm-hmm. Right up until the year of 2003, June, there was no requirement to report to the state any numbers whatsoever. It is from the numbers from the distributors and from the manufacturers, we range from 89% to 92% estimated. Occasionally, you will end up with a manufacturer who will claim a much higher return rate, which we assume is either from not having good distribution numbers or that there's over-the-border issues. Okay. As far as the escheat funds, back in the late 80s, there was an escheat fund requirement in which at times when the program ran upside down, the state would actually write a check to those distributors or manufacturers. They actually went bankrupt on it and threw it out on the next legislative period. They have since brought back an escheat fund. It's a very convoluted program. It has to do with being commingled, non-commingled. And at the present time, all the major distributors and major players have some type of commingling arrangement that excludes them from that escheat fund contributing. The only thing that is contributing right at the present time is juice and water manufacturers. And at the present time, the Maine Revenue Service will tell you that they struggle with trying to collect those dollars, those nickels and dimes.
Thank you.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much. Randy Stewart, Michael Roth, and Dick Cole. And gentlemen, I'm gonna need for you to keep your testimony to between 2 and 3 minutes each if we're gonna get everybody in who's come today.
Mr. Chair, as they're getting set, I just want to make sure my comments are taken. There have been a lot of individuals that have come up from the retail side that actually have come up with solutions. What I heard just recently from the last individual did not seem to really give us solutions. It was just basically rejection.
Solutions are always helpful. Thank you, Senator. Gentlemen?
Chairman, my name is Randy Stewart, committee. I am here on behalf of Albertsons, a retailer in this state with 49 stores. And I come today to tell you that we're in support of recycling. In fact, is the retailers in this state are pretty good at it, and we've been doing it for quite some time. And as far as our responsibility goes, we shelved $1.2 million of responsibility for that bottle bill last year. And it's part of our operation now. We're not in protest of it or in support of it. And last week you heard testimony from several retailers and colleagues talking about the cost of the bottle bill and the unsanitary issues that went with it. That's not why I'm here today. I'm here to talk about, and much like the gentleman from Maine said, the current technology within reverse vending machines that we have today. The gentleman from Crank that was here last week who talked about that they don't have the capacity currently to handle the excess, the water bottle piece. If we added that to them today, they don't have the ability to do it. And then finally, the space issue. I'll be brief. The current reverse vending machines that we have today will recycle 650 aluminum cans in the same space that it takes to do 100 plastic bottles. So when you talk about in terms of the retailer space, what that would do to us, to recycle the bottles that we sold last year, it would triple the amount of space that we currently are committing to recycling today. So the technology doesn't support it based on the current reverse vending machine. Now, I would tell you that Recycle Bank, which was a solution that Dan brought in last week, doesn't eliminate the responsibility of the bottle bill from the retailers. But it is a solution that might perhaps help as we add or look at adding things like plastic bottles to that in terms of the space issue and the technology limitations that are currently out there, much like the gentleman from Maine spoke about. That's it.
Thank you.
Well, Chair Abaki and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Michael Roth. I am one of the 870 employees of Roth's Fresh Markets, an 11-store chain of fresh-focused grocery stores located in Salem and the surrounding towns. I am an avid recycler, have a house full of fluorescent light bulbs, and drive a hybrid car. I don't just wear a green tie. I'm green on the inside. I support Senator Betsy Johnson's proposal for a 2-year delay before discussions began on mandating the addition of plastic water bottles to the current bottle bill and to allow a 2-year trial of an incentive program called Recycle Bank to potentially dramatically increase recycling. In one Philadelphia, Pennsylvania suburb, the number of households that practice curbside recycling went from 9% to 91%. Last Thursday, the representative Safely gave you a list of all the dangerous items store employees have found when cans and bottles are brought back into a grocery store. I want to spend my 2 minutes telling you about the dangers that come back with empty bottles and cans that you cannot see. In 1971, when the original bottle bill was enacted, grocery stores sold 99.5% packaged foods or foods that you would take home and cook before eating. Almost no stores had in-store production bakeries, in-store working kitchen delis, and none had tortilleria, pizzeria, salad bars, olive bars. In the last 10 years, grocery stores have become food manufacturing facilities with large amounts of space, square footage dedicated to make food on-site in bakeries, grills, delis, kitchen, pizzerias, and tortillerias, or ready-to-eat food in olive bars, salad bars, fresh fruit, and sushi. If you vote yes on expanding the bottle bill, you are voting yes to increasing the E. coli, Listeria, and chloroforms in a food manufacturing facility. That is a bold statement, but I ask a Portland-based sanitation company to do swab tests at the bottle return machines at 6 grocery stores in Salem. Those swab tests were sealed and taken to food quality labs, and I have given you a copy of the quality assurance report. I'll just take a second to go through that. It was from 6 stores in Salem. They were performed by John C. Horn. He owns a company called Sanitation and Safety Services. And the swab tests were put in sealed containers and taken to food quality labs, which I also attached those reports. I whited out the names of the stores, but the Lancaster A was tested positive for Listeria on both the bottle machine and the glass machine. Lancaster B tested positive for Listeria, and Lancaster D tested positive for, their chloroform count was 130,000 parts per million, and that's a level that would make any human sick. And they also tested 340 E. coli. These results were taken when the weather was cold, and I won't go into that. But if you want to take these same results in the winter or the summer, excuse me, at 72 degrees,
actually, please don't go through the results, okay, only because we're short on time, okay, and the committee and the work group will consider your, okay, written submission.
If you turn to the color picture, I just want to show you how cross contamination. I'll be real brief here. There's a picture of some people returning some bottles. There's a physical contact, cans and bottles picked up in ditches adjacent to dairy farms, hog farms, dog run areas, germ-filled trash cans, floors of public restrooms, whatever. Those cans touch the bottom of the shopping cart. Those carts are put into a cart. Then after they're redeemed, they're put into a cart storage area. Then you, me, or anybody else, innocent customer, picks up that same cart and places their food on the bottom of the cart. Those just purchased food products are set on their counters in their kitchen at home or the refrigerator, and that's how cross-contamination happens. And that's how you would cause the Listeria and E. coli to get from a ditch into someone's refrigerator. One last sentence here. If you vote yes on expanding the bottle bill, you are potentially doubling the items brought into a food manufacturing facility. You are voting yes to doubling the danger of infecting the citizens with E. coli, Listeria, and the chloroforms. People do die from these types of bacteria, and many, many people get a 24-hour bout of what's commonly known as stomach flu. In conclusion, it seems wrong to me to disregard public safety now that curbside recycling and recycling at transfer stations are a reality around the state. I ask you to vote no on this bill and all work together with Senator Betsy Johnson to develop a 21st century comprehensive solution to recycling and litter reduction. I would like to add, as far as the grocers, when I first heard about Recycle Bank, and Joe Gilliam would swear to this, I volunteered for $30,000 to buy two of the machines for Salem, Oregon. There's actually, you have to buy a machine to actually weigh the recycled products. And I stepped up immediately and said that we'd fund two in Salem if they did the cycle, the test here. But I guess as Senator Betsy Johnson said, they were going to do them in two different areas. And I also, I'm speaking only for Ross.
Actually, I need you to really wrap it up so we can get on to the other folks. Thank you. Mr. Cole?
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Dick Cole. I'm testifying on Senate Bill 481. I am the store director at Bales Farmington Marketplace, an independent grocery store. We have three stores within our company. I just briefly like to reiterate about the problems that we're faced with, the health issues, noise, and the smell with the bottle machines. We do support the bottle bill. We have done everything possible to support it throughout the years. It's been difficult because the machines are located within our stores, two of our three stores, and it's been hard to keep clean. The largest concern I have for the future is the increase of the recycling products, because we have approximately 20% of our back room right now devoted to that. If we double in size, that's also going to increase our storage in our back room. That's going to be really difficult for us. The cost of our machines, 7 years ago we bought four machines for approximately $55,000. If this new system increases double or triple, we'll have to buy probably four more machines at the minimum, four or eight more machines, and that's going to be financially difficult for our company. We do want to support a recycling bill that will be effective for everyone, and we think that the recycling center is the best way to go.
Okay, thank you very much. The last panel up today is going to be John Matthews, Jeremiah Bauman, and Katie Daly. Keep your testimony short. For the few people who didn't get to testify, remember that after the work group is done, we will be having more hearings, and we'll have an opportunity then.
Is the agency down here to testify in Atkinson's will? All right, we'll just go ahead and watch.
Thank you. Mr. Matthews, you want to begin?
Thank you very much. My name is John Matthews. I'm employed with Garten Services as well as previous testimony. However, I'm here as one of the founding members of the Association of Oregon Recyclers. I was privileged to be involved with the passage of the first bottle bill. I'm sorry Representative Berger had to leave. I had occasion to work with their father. I've been employed in the recycling business ever since. I was a student at Oregon State University and when we started the recycling program back there in Earth Day of 1970. Oregon's bottle bill has been a great success in several ways. They have it's prevented, it's reduced its target litter program and increased the recycling rates. Matter of fact, as an example of the litter, the Association of Oregon Recyclers conducted some litter surveys in Multnomah, Lane, and Marion counties and found that those containers that were not, the beverage containers that were not part of the bottle bill were twice as prevalent as those containers that were covered by the bottle bill. We also find that the best curbside recycling programs currently in Oregon, after many years of operation, are still generally less than 55%, in the 45-55 category. Whereas bottle bill, even though it has come down from the original high of about 95%, it's still better than 80%. So it says something to, there's something about a bottle bill concept that's important. In fact, it's important for more than just what we know of, in bottleness. It is the shining beacon of Oregon's greenness reputation, which has led to the influx of green business in Oregon, as well as new residents that value the quality of life that we have to offer in Oregon. Now, that's not to say that Oregon's bottle bill does not have its shortcomings. As you've heard over and over again, the retail industry has always taken the short end of the stick as far as their costs and their responsibilities in the successful operation of the bottle bill. And it's also not been an even-handed short end of the stick. Those smaller privately owned businesses, local businesses that do not have the economies of scale, have found it even tougher to deal with the intricacies of handling the returns that you've been hearing about for some time now. However, if you look at the proposals, particularly in Senate Bill 634, which we are looking at, what we are focusing on not so much as an expansion of the bottle.
Got about 30 more seconds. Make it a good 30 seconds. We've appreciated your testimony.
Okay. We're talking about modernization. And my handout I gave you, we talked about the 10 cent is just a nominal increase, but it will have, it could get us back up to 90%. We're talking about we're addressing single service containers, which are typically the ones that are most discarded away from the home where the curbside recycling is not acceptable. SB 634 does address the relief of retailers by establishing the redemption centers. We're going to tell you a story about Ross later, I guess. We tried to implement a redemption center ourselves, but it was not fundable by the mere commodity value of those materials, and so it failed to take off. So, in short, we think there are elements in SB 634 that addresses the shortfall of the current one while addressing the benefits of modernization, of having more containers on to increase recovery rates. And indeed, one of the issues before us today is the low recycling rate of plastic containers. The bottle bill with redemption rates nearly 90% will put us over that problem area. I'd be happy to answer questions later.
Not today, but we recognize your history with the bottle bill, and it will be back again, and would welcome you back again. Mr. Bauman, I'm sure you will be back again, too, so you've got about a minute and a half.
Thank you, Chair Vaki and members of the committee. My name is Jeremiah Bauman, for the record, environmental advocate with the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group, or OSPIRG. I've given out written testimony, so I'm just going to very, very briefly hit the highlights, including some points not already covered and not in the written testimony. In my view, and in OSPIRG's now nearly 30-year history of focusing on the bottle bill, there are two primary reasons the bottle bill is so uniquely effective as an environmental program. One reason is the refundable deposit creates a strong incentive for consumers to bring it back. And the second reason is the unique convenience. On the deposit, the point is obvious that deposit has declined substantially over time. In case you're curious, the written testimony includes a chart of what a nickel's worth today. More interestingly, I'd like to direct your attention to the second chart that's attached to my testimony. It's a chart of recycling rates in various states with bottle bills versus the national average. The obvious point is that all of them are a lot better than the national average. The relevant point for the nickel versus dime deposit issue is that that top line on the chart is Michigan's recycling rate, consistently between 95% and 97%. The main difference between Michigan's rate and Oregon's system and Michigan's system is that Michigan's deposit is 10 cents. On the second topic, the unique convenience of the system, there's a very specific form of convenience when a consumer can recycle a bottle by taking it to a place they're already going to get more bottles. I think it matters less whether the redemption center is within a mile or 5 miles or 2 blocks of their house than that they can recycle that bottle at a place they're already going. Taking your attention to that same chart again, the top line is Michigan. The three X's sort of floating up there are Oregon. I don't know why. They don't have more data for Oregon. You'll notice that both of them are separated by a fair margin from the other states. The only difference, the biggest difference certainly that I can find between Oregon and Michigan and the rest of the Bonneville states is the rest of the states have redemption centers rather than requiring return to retail. That said, I understand there are a lot of good arguments for why the grocers have handled the lion's share of the work here and have not been refunded or compensated for their work complying with the bottle bill for the last 30 years. I think the solution there is not to charge a fee on consumers, not to make it less convenient to recycle, but rather to figure out the appropriate way to compensate them. And most states have done this either by providing a percent of unredeemed deposits for the retails to compensate for their efforts, or by requiring distributors to add an additional 1 to 3 cent fee with the deposit that they pay to the retailers for the handling fees. I will leave it at that.
Thank you, Mr. Bauman. Ms. Daly?
Good afternoon, Chair Vaki and members of the committee. Representative Dingfelder, my name is Katie Daly for the record. I'm the political director for the Oregon League of Conservation Voters, but I'm here today representing Recycling Advocates, for which I'm a board member. Recycling Advocates was founded in 1987 and is Oregon's only citizen-based grassroots group dedicated to creating a sustainable future through local efforts to reduce, reuse, and recycle. I'm sorry that Representative Berger isn't here. I got involved a few years ago in becoming a master recycler myself, and one of the things I did in order to attain that status was to stand on a line sorting trash from a dog park, and you can imagine what the trash was like there, trying to find the non-covered containers that were in that dog park, and it was pretty enlightening, and it wasn't a very good situation that Representative Berger is pretty committed to, I think, expansion of this, and I think we should all give her a kudos for that. I've been going around the Capitol talking about electronic waste recycling, and one of the things that I talk to the legislators about is that we don't want a model that follows what the bottle bill has. With electronic waste, we're going to be finding new items that are going to come into the waste stream that we can't even think about right now, and we don't want to fall into the same problems that we have with the bottle bill 35 years later, just covering the same products. So I think there are a number of good things with the three bills that are out here today, and I wanted to highlight the main principles that concern recycling advocates. First of all, we feel that a bottle bill should cover all beverage containers, and I think you've had a lot of data. The numbers speak for themselves. There was $4 million spent against a campaign in 1996 to convince people that it would be very confusing, and I think the least confusing thing would be if all beverage containers were covered. And so we feel that that would solve the two problems: one of confusion of what's covered and what's not covered. It would increase the recycling rate of all beverage containers. And would also solve the problem as more products come into the market that we can't conceive of right now of having them be covered into the future. So that's a big point that we want to make. The second is that a refund value deposit should be increased, and I think Jeremiah presented a lot of good data around that. We also feel that the ease and convenience for consumers need to be maintained. Like Jeremiah said, we feel that places you go to be able to buy products should be the same places that you should be able to redeem them. But we also do feel that there is value in the idea of redemption centers that cover all the products so that you don't have to make multiple trips to multiple stores to return your containers. We feel that by moving it to some of the flow from grocery stores to redemption centers would take some of the pressure off of the grocery stores. That would allow them then to handle the products that come back if we expand to more products. And finally, the idea of a producer responsibility model is one that I feel we should be moving for more than just beverage containers, but for a lot of different products. And if we could move to something that would set up a model that would allow us to do this for other products, other things in the future, I think that's a good direction that we should be going.
Very good. Thanks, the three of you. We were a little rushed at the end there, but I'm glad that you were all three here. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bills 481 and 634. I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 568. And Ms. Marshall, if you could give us a quick rundown of that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 568 requires the Department of Transportation to transfer surcharges from the Crater Lake National Park Registration Plate Program to the Oregon Community Foundation. And for the record, there is a letter from the Oregon Community Foundation expressing their pleasure at the opportunity to administer this fund. And I believe that Jack Evans from ODOT may be here to speak to the measure.
Are you here? I don't think so. No. Senator Atkinson is, though, and if you would like to come, except I need, hang on just a minute, Senator.
Take the testimony.
Senator comes up to give the testimony. The entire room cleared and my committee left. I don't know what to make of that, Senator.
Sue and I are still here. Excuse me, Sue and I are still here.
Yeah, oh, I'm sorry.
We're ready.
We can take the testimony.
Well, this is going to be quite a test because as soon as you are done, I'm going to gavel us into a work session. I'm going to bring your colleague, Senator Byron, and see if he'll vote with you. So,
okay.
Without hearing the testimony. So please, go right ahead, Senator.
Chair, faithful member of the committee, for the record, my name is Senator Jason Atkinson, District 2 in Southern Oregon. This is a bill brought to my attention from the Crater Lake National Park Trust. Actually, I am one of the trustees on the trust, and this has taken, this concept has taken a couple of years for us to try to work out on our own before we realized it required legislation. And what this bill does simply is it takes the proceeds from the sale from the Crater Lake National Park license plate program and moves those funds into the Oregon Community Foundation. There's two reasons for that. Three reasons. The first reason, I guess, is that the program was wildly successful, and for a while that license plate was the fastest selling license plate in Oregon, and I think one of which won some national awards and was one of the most productive national park conservation plates or something in the nation. In fact, what we did in Oregon spurred other states and other national parks to follow. When we originally wrote the bill, we had two major hurdles to get over. One was startup costs of a couple hundred thousand dollars to get the machine ready to go Crater Lake. It was the first license plate in the country without raised letters. It's a flat plate. And the other issue was what to do with the proceeds. And what we had elected to do, because it made good policy since the time, was to take the proceeds of the funds and send them to the National Park Foundation, which would administer them and in turn send them back to the Science and Learning Center at the park. Well, throughout the last couple of years, as the corpus has grown, we've also come to realize that the National Park Foundation has gone through some increasingly difficult times, not only with managing the money, but also with their overhead. And just to be very brief, we've lost the board wants to make sure that while they're learning how to invest or they're changing their strategies, we wanted to make sure if we could change the law to move it to the Oregon Community Foundation. So this board comes to you with a tremendous amount of work from not only the park, but also with the National Park Trustees, and essentially keeps those dollars in Oregon.
Good.
And they'll still be used for the same reason, which is at the National Park.
And Mr. Evans, I think, came in. And if you could, we're very short on time, but if you wouldn't mind taking the table and just at least affirming on the record the agency's support for the bill.
Chair Vakin, Jack, members of the committee, I'm Jack Evans with the Department of Transportation. And, yes, we will support this. We have no problem. This just is a simple change in where we send these funds, so there shouldn't be any issue at all for us.
That's all I needed, Mr. Evans. Thank you. And I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 568 and entertain a motion.
Why don't we go to work session?
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Senator Pozanski. Open a work session on Senate Bill 568. Now I will entertain the motion.
Mr. Chair,
I'd move Senate Bill 568 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Pozanski moves Senate Bill 568 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? And are there any objections? And seeing none, the motion carries. And Senator Atkinson, would you carry the bill?
Thank you.
I am going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 450. Ms. Marshall.
Just to refresh everyone's memory, Senate Bill 450 allows certain landowners to create rangeland fire protection associations, allows the state forester to enter into cooperative agreements or contract with rangeland protection associations to protect rangelands from fire, allows the state forester to assist rangeland protection associations with training, acquisition of firefighting equipment, and provision of liability insurance, directs the state forester or rangeland protection association to provide protection after the State Board of Forestry determines that the rangeland is included in the rangeland protection system of liability. It appropriates money from the general fund, and there's a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Atkinson.
I would move Senate Bill 450 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Actually, we need a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
That's what I said. I'd like to move to Ways and Means.
With a due pass.
With a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Senator Pozanski. I appreciate that. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries. And we had one other bill, but we are just plumb out of time. No, we don't need a carrier for that, do we? We are just out of time, so we are going to have to come back to Senate Bill 156 at another time. And with that, we are adjourned.